The Ray Foley Podcast.
Oh, here we go. Here come the details.
A Today FM original podcast.
Ray.
Yeah.
I love the show.
Hey!
Guys, cop on. Can we just cop on?
Why?
Let's just cop on and try and do a good podcast.
A good podcast?
Let's try and do a podcast. If people are downloading it and subscribing to it, there's
like
a certain expectation that we will deliver.
I don't like this.
Some sense of podcasting standard.
I don't have it in me.
Forget it. Just forget the whole thing. Come back next week. Hello, thank you for downloading. JP at todayfm.com. This is the Ray Foley podcast. Ray Foley on Today FM podcast. And you can send emails to JP at todayfm.com. And follow me at Ray Foley Insta. Or indeed, you can click into todayfm.com and listen back to any of the broadcasts there. Don't be giving out about the shows not being up because they're still there. Listen live listen back to the Daily Show on the Today FM app.
Isn't stupid sort of trivial stuff? That's the kind of thing that fuels podcasts generally, like real dumb stuff, stupid stuff, notions.
There are smart podcasts. Listen to Pod Save America, which is an American podcast about American politics. I listened to that one, Who Trolled Amber? I just finished that one today, actually. Have you listened to that?
I have. Amber Heard, I presume.
It's the story of Amber Heard v. Johnny Depp in court. Two court cases, actually. There was a UK one and an American one. And in the course of the American one, there was this massive, huge wave of online hashtagging commentary about specifically anti-Amber and pro-Johnny Depp. And this guy does a really clever and intelligent investigation as to who was orchestrating that. So yeah, there are clever podcasts, but it couldn't be more different or more opposite to what we're achieving or accomplishing.
Would
here.
You call that our USP, our unique selling point, to us being a bit dumber than the average?
Absolutely. Pick as
right.
Custard.
I'd say I'm more stupid than you are, generally speaking.
Oh, absolutely.
And thanks for agreeing.
I would say
so
that.
So readily.
I would also say that. I think most people would say that. I'd say like any test or any measure of that, like IQ test or whatnot, that would also show the same.
Can you fail an IQ test? Because I'm fairly sure I would. I'm not joking. I have never taken an IQ test and I'm slightly scared to take an IQ
JP
test.
JP had to repeat his IQ test.
I had to repeat an eye test.
JP stayed back and he had to repeat the IQ test. I went for Mensa at one point and genuinely...
Look at you. I mean, that is the definition of notions. Thinking you're so clever that you need to be in a club with other clever people.
Don't you need to be a dickhead to even put yourself forward for it? The thing is, though, it was to get a result. It was to find out whatever it was. So it wasn't actually to join, but it was to, and then I did a bit of research, and then there are only specific dates and days that this was years ago, specific dates and days that you can go and do it. And then there were terms and conditions and you needed to pay for it, I think. And then in the end, I just lost interest in there was several sort of hoops and it just didn't suit.
Have you ever found out your IQ?
Well, I've done it on the internet, but like, what does that mean? It's just
if you did a few of them, you'd probably get an average and you would get something that's close to what your IQ is.
Yeah, it's high enough. I remember being surprised at how high it was, but disappointed that it wasn't higher, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I want to see that number. I don't want a definite number in front of my face.
For me, I think it's actually a representation of my academic career, which is, or my pre-college academic career, which is like a good B. A good B, I think.
Well, that's better than average. That's good.
That's it, yeah. So I'm like I said, I was happy with it, but I would have liked to have done better. The story of my life.
Well, given that you're so clever, maybe you can help me out, because I was walking home yesterday and I was going past a set of pedestrian lights, or traffic lights, basically. And a gentleman was waiting to cross the road. The light was on green for the traffic, so he was standing on a red. And he starts punching the big round button, punching it impatiently. I was walking the other way, just going past him and saw him. And it occurred to me that at 44 years of age, I don't know what that button does. And I really don't know what it does. I know it's there. And I know when I stand there at the pedestrian crossing, I sometimes will hit it. But I don't know what it's for. So I have some options. Right.
Well, I can tell you what it does. But no, that'll ruin your bit. That'll ruin the podcast.
There's not much of a bit here. You know, it's really not
it's
that thought out.
It's a stupid bit based on a stupid question by a stupid person.
But I was trying to figure out what it was. so I came up with options. So it's either,
yeah,
like the best case scenario would be it makes the traffic stop quicker. So the more you punch it, it knows that you're there waiting to cross. So it's more likely to turn red for the traffic, and then you'll cross.
The more you punch it.
This is my favorite option, and this is the one I've usually thought was the option. Then I got a bit clever and I thought, oh no, maybe it's for blind people, so that it lets the lights know that there are blind people waiting to cross. So they push the button so it makes the noise so they know when it's safe to cross.
Oh, hang on.
If you've got sight, you don't need to hear the noise.
Are you talking about specifically the noise? Or are you talking about the
I'm talking about
the button.
Button. I'm talking about, well, I assume maybe the button activates the noise. So if you are partially sighted, that it gives you the noise as a nudge and a wink to cross when it's safe. And I don't even think I have a third option. So I think is it not either one of those? What?
So I'm actually genuinely bewildered here now, and I'll tell you why. Because we started this whole conversation in a laughy, jokey sort of, oh, isn't he stupid? And as his best friend, I'm like, I haven't, up until this point, thought he's actually stupid. It was just for the purpose of the bit that I was playing along, keeping the ball in the air, if you will, comedically saying and agreeing with him that he's stupid. But I don't actually, in my heart of hearts, I don't actually think he's stupid. And now, with this, dear listener, with this dilemma that he's presented to me, I can only conclude that he's actually thick as two sharp planks.
You're saying this was the straw that broke the camel's
was it.
Stupid bag. So go on then. I mean,
does the button do? That's
I had
asking.
A good 5 minutes from that point until I reached home, and I was thinking, what does the, and I passed a couple more lights as well going, what
have you not
button?
Thought about this before in all of your life? How old are you? Jesus.
What else could the button do?
For the first time in your life, you've thought about it and you reached a conclusion finally at the age of what, 45?
Not 45 yet, but you know, going on 45 in a couple of weeks. Yeah, but like, so the lights, there's only two things those I'll lights. Hang on. This is why I think this, and then you can get your smart arse answer in. There's only two things the lights do, and that is they change the colour and they make a noise. So what else could the button do?
I'll tell you.
And are you sure you're correct?
No.
Because I don't want bad info.
Well, I do not know this, but I can make a pretty good educated guess. Even though I've no education in traffic lights or traffic management in any way.
It wasn't the basis of your college degree.
No, it wasn't. I've got 2 degrees, by the way, I'll let you know. Just FYI. Yeah. Okay, I'll tell you what I think it is. And if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. jp@todayfm.com. Okay, so if you don't push the button, the light doesn't do anything. The light, this is at a pedestrian crossing, correct?
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything because it won't randomly change for a pedestrian at all. It's only ever going to deal with the traffic, with the cars.
Mm.
Unless it'll give a pedestrian alert, like the green man, if it suits the stopping of the cars. Otherwise, it's going to operate as a car on-road vehicular management system. The purpose of the button is to say, I'm a pedestrian and I'm here and I'd like to cross the road.
So it does make the lights turn red quicker?
In theory. However, my understanding, let me give you an example, okay? Let's say you've got a main road and a smaller road approaching it. This is if you're in a car. So it's a T-junction. You're approaching a T-junction onto a main road, right? As I understand it, the lighting sequence on a main road will maintain priority on green.
Not indefinitely.
Yeah.
But it's a it's a traffic management system, so it
this
assumes...
is what I'm saying. No, let me finish.
Yeah.
He probably hasn't noticed this either.
Talking about me in the third person,
yeah,
right here.
Right. So you've got your main road, and that has priority in terms of greens, because in theory, that's going to have the most traffic on it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's only the smaller tributary joining the T. It's only when there's a car approaching that red light that those lights, all of the lights, need to be told there's a car waiting to get on now and get through that junction. So you're aware of this, I'm sure, the things on the road, yeah?
Is it like magnetized or something, isn't it?
It's those things. They're at every
Do they test weight, or do they recognize that metal is above them?
I actually don't know. Right. I don't know the answer to that, but I know that their function is to see that there's a car waiting. Because if you've ever noticed, when we used to work on breakfast, we'd be driving in at 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30 in the morning, you'd hit all the green lights if you were on a main road. Because there was never anyone coming on from the smaller roads because no one was activating the those traffic sensors to turn them red against you.
Yeah.
Did you ever have that?
You're right. I should have noticed that.
Well, I did because I thought about all this because I'm a loser.
I'm nearly sure, though, I would be on a main road and then you're coming up to a pedestrian crossing, like not one that forces you to stop, but the lights go red and there's nobody there. Have I imagined that scenario?
Yeah. Okay. Unless someone has pushed it.
I'm stupid and I'm delusional.
There are arses that go past as they're walking past. These people should be locked up or maybe even, dare I say, executed. That they, as they're walking past, they can't help themselves but to push the button on the pedestrian light, even though they've no intention of crossing. They're just walking along and they push the button. And then I have to come on and stop at the red because this idiot has pushed the button. So anyway, it's exactly the same function that you pushing the pedestrian button has exactly the same function as a car coming up to the junction and stopping. It's alerting the system that a car either needs to get through or a human wants to cross.
But often, sorry, I know we need to wrap this up because it's complete nonsense, but often when I'm at a pedestrian crossing,
yeah,
I often don't hit the button and the light still changes and that allows me to cross.
That's because it has been alerted to the car that wants to get out to the junction and is in theory turning right and it is giving, so just in case there's a pedestrian there, it'll present the green man for you, the pedestrian, to go across. The car has done the job of pushing the button for you.
Gosh, it really favours the cars, doesn't it? Huh?
By the way, I don't know this at all. This is all guesswork on my part.
So you're saying that when I do come up to a set of lights as a pedestrian, I should, as a matter of course, I should push that button regardless. I should just do that. And I'd be missing out if I didn't. I could miss out if I didn't.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. But, right. But and also it's worth noting, I don't think, like your man was doing, punching it again and again and again does anything. Even though I do it all the time. And second, so it has no added bonus. It's exactly the same function as, for instance, a car being on top of those sensors. It's not doing anything. It's just the system has been alerted and it's not going to happen any faster. And second, the noise element of it. Well, there's the pushing the button of it for a deaf person. I don't think that necessarily...
Blind.
Sorry, a blind person. I don't think that does anything. But you know, the... thing, that noise, it goes off on both sides. So a blind person can hear, right, it's here, and I'm going to walk towards the sound on the other side. So they're both chirping at the same time that it's green, and I can walk and I can use the sound. And similarly, just before you get onto the road, I'm sure you've noticed, Jesus, he hasn't noticed, you've noticed that there's a rounding, a sort of a pebble effect.
Oh, I know them. I know what they're
and
for.
That's also for blind people.
Right.
And final thing, also for blind people, there's an arrow. You'll see it in plastic on a lot of the pedestrian crossings. There's an arrow on the top of the, you know, where the button is placed.
The box, yeah.
The box. So you push the button and on the top of it, there's an arrow that shows the arrow of where you're supposed to cross, the direction of crossing.
If you're blind, how do you see an arrow?
You can feel it because it's a 3D arrow.
So, in summary, is it much the same as calling a lift? You press the button, letting the lift know that you're there and you want to go up or down, and then the lift comes to you, sort of.
Yeah, and similarly, pushing the button again and again and again and again isn't going to do anything. There's a whole other discussion then about the lifts. Like, if you're on the floor zero, ground floor, and the lift is on floor... let me do that the other way around. No, yeah, and the lift is on floor three, four...
It's above you.
Or higher.
Yeah.
You don't put, and you want to go up to the fourth, you want to go up. So you want the lift to come down from four to zero so you can go back up to four again. You're standing with a bunch of people and they push down because they want to bring the lift down from four. I found myself explaining to people, no, you're telling the lift where you want to go. So push up.
Does it make any difference
though? It does. It does. And I'll tell you why.
Oh my God.
Because you're telling the system you want to go down, right? And let's say you're on zero and there's a basement and someone gets into the lift and they're going to the basement. They'll be stopped so you can get in. And then you get in and you're like, and you're down to the, all of a sudden you're getting in. You're like, Jesus, why is it going down to the basement? I told it I wanted to go up to four. No, it's still going down to the basement because it got a request, a call to go to the basement in the same time. And it thinks you want to go down.
I'd nearly say if I took an IQ test now, I'd score slightly higher because my friend Ray Foley.
He's learned so much from me. And that's why it's not an arsey thing. That's why I considered joining Mensa, because I spend my mind. That's the ADHD. That's what that is.
Is that it? It's the I need to get me some ADHD.
Do you know what? I need to get me some Lee Cronin is what I need. Lee, we were talking to Lee about a year ago. He's
this time last year, yeah.
Was it?
It was April of 2023, yeah.
The funny thing about Lee was, it was just a little bit that we were doing on the air where we'd seen, you know, that I do this thing on the radio where I ring people and just basically congratulate them if they've got great news or something good or something positive is happening. And this was mind-blowing because an Irish guy was given the job of being... of directing the latest movie in the Evil Dead franchise. And it was called Evil Dead Rise. There's big buzz and excitement about it, particularly among the horror fraternity, you know, people, fans of the Evil Dead. This was, of course, Sam Raimi had been the originator of it. He took on the franchise and it exploded. It was hugely successful. It was about to be released at the time. But since then, of course, it's gone on and done amazing business. Lee Cronin, his name is, whose work includes Evil Dead Rise and The Hole in the Ground, is joining forces with long-standing partners Wild Atlantic Pictures' John Kevill and McDara Kelleher to form a new production company. Doppelgangers is the name of the company. And the company, Doppelgangers, that Lee is part of, are celebrating this first look deal with New Line Cinema.
I mean, I don't know how traffic lights work. So
this
I
lad
don't
doesn't know how traffic lights
or
work.
Or lifts. Now, so I definitely don't know what a first look deal means.
I don't know what a first look deal is, but I have a guess.
Oh, well, I mean, I have a guess, but I don't know.
I can ask the man himself. I got a phone number. We still have the old number. Let me call my Lee Cronin. Let me call my horror guy.
Yeah.
It's ringing.
Hello.
Hello, Lee Cronin.
Yes.
Hello, sir. It's Ray Foley calling from Today FM. How are you?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I'm very good, man. How are you? Well, listen, congratulations on the old this first look deal with New Line. This is incredible.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's been a little while in the making, but it's a really exciting moment for myself, my creative partners. So we're overwhelmed is the wrong word. We're excited to get started. I really want to make some great movies for New Line.
Not over, you're whelmed. You're just whelmed.
We're whelmed. Just a bit of whelming, yeah. Exactly.
Whelmed just the right amount. We were talking to you last year. You were taking on the Evil Dead Rise.
Yeah.
And like I said, I was hopping on that bandwagon then. Do you know, it was the kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, it was good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, this was ahead of the release, but it's gone on and done incredible business. I suppose you always knew it was your baby.
You hope. You do hope. Like, look, I think when you make a movie and it's got a commercial focus, you definitely are hoping for the best, but you've no way of knowing. There's lots of stuff that's in the laps of the gods when a movie is put out there, how an audience will react. I think the really exciting thing was we brought back the Evil Dead fans, but actually a whole new fan base as well. That was the thing that I really wanted to do, because I'm a fan of those movies and I wanted the fans to be happy, but I also wanted to bring in a younger audience that maybe hadn't experienced a movie quite like that before. And I think the box office around the world reflected that we did have that success, which was great for me and everybody that, you know, hustled and killed themselves to make the movie what it was.
It's brilliant, yeah. Particularly the newer generation, new generations coming into it and finding it, and then of course exploring the whole end of things. I like as well though that you seem to be doing something different. Or you can tell me if you're doing something different or not. That it's not quite just I don't know, schlocky sort of jumps. Jump scares. You're doing a bit more than that, yeah.
Yeah, I love, you know, the horror, thriller, supernatural space. It's always been something I've loved since I was a kid. But I'm trying to plant, and it was kind of part of why, you know, working with New Line Cinema as well and what they do, kind of want to plant a lot of flags in that space rather than keeping on sticking the same flag into the same piece of ground. So my first feature film, The Hole in the Ground, is very different to Evil Dead Rise. And the things I'm working on now are different again, you know. And that's what's really cool about working with a studio like New Line and working with Warner Brothers is the things that they've done. So, you know, New Line is often known as the house that Freddy built, as in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. Yeah. They were the thing that kicked that studio off. But they also went on and made The Lord of the Rings. And they're movies I love equally for very different reasons. So we're looking at that playground, myself and John Kevill and McDara Kelleher, my producing partners. We're kind of looking at that whole playground and being like, where can we go and have fun next? Because we don't want to repeat the magic trick too often. We'd rather go and do something new when given the chance.
Yeah, mix it up a bit.
Exactly.
Where are you from?
I'm from Skerries.
In North Dublin, yeah.
North County Dublin, and, yeah.
How did you... I know we kind of went over this the last time, but I really am fascinated in people, how they get started, how they get into it, and how it snowballs, and how they... did you go to college for movie making?
I did, yeah. I was clearly drawn towards it from a young age, and firmly had made my mind up that's what I wanted to do with a career, probably by the time I was like 13 or 14.
Wow.
Which I feel really lucky, because not everybody does have that moment where they're like, this is what I want to do. It kind of felt vocational to me at that point. I certainly didn't expect to, you know, get there quickly. It's not a quick game. So yeah, I started writing little screenplays and short film ideas, and I was trying to be in a band and be cool and be a drummer, and I had a drum kit, and I sold my drum kit and bought a camcorder. And that was kind of the focus from there moving forward was towards how do I do this, and then going to film school, and then coming out of film school and realizing that the industry is vast and there's a lot to learn, and you just try a lot of different pathways. But you know, I've worked in a lot of jobs within the industry to understand and earn my stripes. You know, I've made the coffee, I've changed the toilet rolls, and understand every aspect of the business from top to bottom as much as possible. So I feel, you know, I said the stripes have been earned, but there's no overnight success with any of this. It's been a really long road.
What age are you?
I never tell that.
Okay.
No, I'm around 40, put it that way.
Okay, so, yeah. So you're young enough,
I feel young enough still. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you're like, as you say, you knew at 13. Did you have anyone in your life that inspired? Like, some people have like an uncle or a relative.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, that was in the business that you kind of look towards and go, Jesus, yeah, maybe I could do that. Did you have that?
Yeah, like I did, like, you know, my family were quite creative, full stop. Both my mother and my father would be crafty, for want of a better description. There was always making and doing and building throughout my kind of childhood. My dad specifically did have an interest from his teenage years in filmmaking. So he shot a lot of Super 8 short films and comedy sketches.
Wow.
When I guess like in kind of like the late, cause my dad's 82 now, so I'll give his age away. He's proud of it, you see. But yeah, he was making the Super 8 kind of Monty Python-esque things before Monty Python even existed. Just weird stuff. And I've got a bunch of it digitized, which is great. I have the old film on file. So, and he'd do projection nights then. He was a scout leader, and he'd make movies about like scout camps and various things. And I'd kind of be the barman and projectionist, and people would come around and the white sheet would be hung up. And so I was always interested in the moving image, but also just watching cartoons as a kid and getting drawn into watching horror movies at a young age by my older siblings. That had a big, big influence on me. Seeing things I shouldn't have seen at a tender age is a big reason I think I have some sort of career on the march.
It's so funny because, you know, it's like, oh, it rots kids' brains and, you know, it terrorizes them and traumatizes them. But you actually managed to make a business or a career out of it. It's so funny.
Turned it into something.
I remember, we'd be of a similar age. I'd be a few years older than you, but I remember being at summer camp, and I remember there was a kid in the summer camp, and I remember him. Well, I'll never forget it for as long as I live. He recounted the entire plot, as you mentioned, Freddie, the entire plot of Nightmare on Elm Street. And I have never seen it. I was a child myself. I would have been, I don't know, 10 or whatever at the time. I've never seen it because I was so traumatized, genuinely, by this guy Rogers' graphic description of and using the veins to use the person as a puppet. I remember that being one of them, and the ceiling.
Yeah.
I've seen clips, but of course you loved it, and it stood to you, of course.
Yeah, like it's interesting how you react to stuff, because like obviously, you know, Rogers ruined it for you there, but
yeah.
There's a bit of an age gap between me and my siblings, so when I between the ages of like 7 and 12, I was seeing Nightmare on Elm Street, Shining, you know, I saw Jaws really young, Poltergeist, a lot of horror movies, but I was, and I still am a little bit of a scaredy cat. So I was watching from, you know, between my fingers or from behind the pillow, but I was tending to watch them react. That was the thing.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time watching how they reacted to things, half eye on the screen, but more focused on them. And I think that's where the bug came from. I was like, that's really fun that you can make things like this. I mean, it's not just about horror or jump scares, right? It's just really good, entertaining storytelling that moves people, you know, because for me, like, although I do make horror movies, it's not a box I'm going to stay in forever. There's lots of types of stories that I want to tell. But I do like the otherworldly and how that can draw you out of the everyday, you know? So again, I look at The Lord of the Rings and there's some ghostly moments and scary moments and tense moments, but there's also adventure and romance and all those things that really draw people in as a story and make people pay attention, which is really exciting to me.
Wasn't that thing, what was it Jackson did at the very beginning of his career? I remember it was kind of this charming horror-y type of thing. Oh, jeez, I don't know.
Bad Taste, it's called.
There you go.
His first movie.
Yeah.
And he made it over a bunch, I think he might have made it over 6 months or a year, as and when he had a bit more money and free weekends, etc. But you know what's really, really nice about that is you see names on the credits of Bad Taste that show up in those same roles on The Lord of the Rings.
He's brought them along,
which is incredible,
yeah,
as a journey, yeah, like his creative partners. And I'm pretty lucky that I've got some people in my circle as well that we've kind of come up together and worked together,
yeah,
which is actually really, really nice way to work, because it's a hard business and it's a stressful business. And if you can do it with your friends and separate the pressure and the friendship, it doesn't feel quite so much like heavy work then.
I've a load of things I want to ask you. You mentioned starting writing at 13, you know, when you were a kid, you realized you wanted to do it. Is that the gateway? Like if you were saying to young kids now, start writing, start storyboarding now, rather than just grabbing a camera and randomly filming. Is it writing? Is that where it comes from?
I think so. It's all about what you want to do. Like I remember at the same time as I might've been writing a short film, I'd also be making a Lego stop motion thing or trying to figure out. I was really into special effects and practical physical effects.
Okay.
So I was kind of drawn into like building different things that could explode with blood, or how to make a hand look possessed, or how to do a makeup application or fake skin. So it was kind of like a lot of playing with a Halloween time of year mindset. I think first and foremost, when you start, just keep your mind open and follow the things that interest you. It's totally okay to grab a camera and run around and document the world. Maybe that's who you are. I think just follow your instincts. And then if you find like-minded people that are enjoying working with you, and even when you're younger, if you've got a mate that's like, I want to act, and you know, like, okay, let's figure something out. It's great to keep those people close and to have that bit of support.
Yeah.
But writing is always a great way into storytelling, to write your ideas down and to plan them a little bit always has value.
You mentioned keep your options open, or keep your, don't say I'm just going to be a director. I'm just going to be a, you know, keep your option in terms of your career and what the direction that a career could go in the movie industry. I heard an interview, I don't know who it was, I heard recently, they were talking about specifically about the Irish industry, and that because we are attracting so much talent, and then we are also training people up then, I suppose there are opportunities in all areas of the industry now in Ireland, because we're just filming so much.
Yeah, the industry is very buoyant. It always ebbs and flows. There's natural, you know, quieter moments and busier moments. But, you know, I think there's two aspects to where the Irish film industry is now, which is really great, which is both the Indigenous filmmakers and filmmaking is growing and getting way more international profile and focus, which then grows our core home industry. And at the same time, then there's, you know, what's known as inward production. So there is plenty of things that come and film in Ireland, TV shows and movies, and the studios are kept very busy. And those productions have a lot of value because they help crew work sometimes on a larger scale and upskill. And then they can bring those skills to maybe a smaller independent movie that's Irish that then helps that movie kind of feel a little bigger as well. So I think the two things feed each other. And I think both of those aspects of the industry, especially in a small island like this, both of those aspects of the industry are important. But the talent is everywhere, you know, behind and in front of the camera. And like, I'm very proud with Evil Dead Rise that so much of the post-production work was carried out in Ireland. Post-production of my movie was longer than the shoot and the preparation. It wasn't as long as the writing took, but you spend a lot of time, and to have, you know, computer artists, to have great sound technicians, to have people creating music, to have Irish musicians, to bring together the concert orchestra to come together and record and have all of that talent. It's really great. It's everywhere you look. And I think one of the biggest pleasures for me is realizing that when you get to make something, I mean, like, you get to be mesmerized when you sit there and see other people using their talents to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
That's, for me, like, the best part of making movies.
I suppose, in terms of mentioning the talent, it's great then that you have people that you can learn from. When you mentioned that you were making the coffee and replacing the toilet roll, those people then are around that you can learn from. I'm listening, I've just about finished Ed Zwick's book.
I haven't read it yet, I've heard it's great.
It is absolutely incredible. But the thing that struck me about it, as you mentioned already, the relationships that you have in terms of people that have been with with you. He mentions a couple of people that have been with him through his entire career, and he celebrates them and elevates them. There's that. And then the other thing that struck me from listening to him is that there's always the next thing. There's always, it's never just this thing. There's the next thing and the thing after it. The plates are spinning all the time. What have you, when you say you're going to do something else, this, are you going to be doing it in Ireland? And can you tell us about what you're working on?
I'm working on, like, you've got to spin it a few plates because things can fall apart. You know, things can fall apart quickly, and not for reasons that they're not a good project. There's just so many points of view and angles when it comes to making a movie, not even making a movie, releasing a movie. And that releasing has a big bearing on what plate you can spin into that world. So I'm working on a number of things. There's a little bit of information already out in the world about a project I have with New Line Cinema called Thaw, which is a horror movie that's set in the future after the ice caps have melted. That happens to be the place and time that a family are searching for their home and face some really dark and sinister forces in that type of world. That's something I'm very passionate about. And again, a very different flagpole to what I've done before.
Yeah.
And again, with our new First Look deal that we have with New Line Cinema, we're just starting the early development work on an out-and-out Irish haunted house ghost story, which I'm really excited by. It's something I've always wanted to do. My family, when I was younger, we went on a family holiday to a little place called Fianna in Kerry. And every member of my family had some sort of weird supernatural experience on that holiday. I think it was 1992 or 93.
I had nothing to do with you and your creepy hand or anything.
Legit. Sure. I look back at the photos and I was wearing my Paddy Bonner Italia 90 jersey. I was having fishing. I was having the time of my life. But since then, and like a family story and family lore, I've always wanted to tell a really terrifying Irish haunted house story. So that is something. Only today was having meetings about it with my writing partner that I'm working on with that project. So, you know, that's at a different stage. That will take a little bit longer to get there. You know, and then with my partners in Doppelgangers, we have a couple of exciting TV shows we're developing as well, because that's a place we want to tell stories to. We've got a show that's deeply rooted in Irish folklore, which we hope could be realized in the next maybe year or 18 months. So it's kind of a balance between stories I love at home and how I want to play around with Irish myths and legends and spooky things, but then also some more international focused stuff as well, and just trying to have that blend. So loads of plates spinning, all going well. If the film gods smile down upon me, I will shoot a movie this year, I hope, and have another movie in the cinema next year. That's the goal. And if that doesn't happen, I'll just keep writing until we get the next one up on deck and get it shot.
That's amazing. And like that, it's not like you're all of your eggs are in the one basket and you're working on just the next project. You mentioned, and this is why I rang you, I wanted to find out, what's a First Look deal with New Line? How does it work?
What is it?
Yeah.
it's very intriguing that there's been some lovely interest in what we're doing. And the truth is, it's kind of a bit of a rare beast, what we are doing as a kind of an Irish or an international company. So, you know, I have a great relationship with all the creative executives inside that studio, and they like the way that I work. It's as simple as that. And then you sometimes go, well, how could we formalize that and work together a little bit more firmly? So what a First Look really is if I wake up in the morning and go, bingo, I have a great idea, and I write down a page, I don't talk to New Line about it first. And we have that reciprocal relationship where, you know, they're supportive of trying to help me get many movies made. But not just as a writer and director, but also as a producer, because I can't shoot everything myself. If I find a book and I want to go, let's adapt this book, let's go, I go and speak to New Line first. But it's all business. They might say yes to some things, they might say no. And if they say no and we still believe in an idea, we can go and talk to other partners out in the industry. But it's a really humbling seal of approval from a place full of people that I have massive respect for, that have survived so many ups and downs in what is an industry that is full of highs and lows, and still come out swinging and still make lots of successful movies. And, you know, I look back to the movies I watched as a kid and seeing that logo pop up on screen. It's funny, if you're a film nerd at all, sometimes the logo up front matters, the studio logo. And New Line was one that always kind of mattered to me. So I feel really lucky that I'm in that place. I always wanted to make an Evil Dead movie, and I got the chance to do it. And I always wanted to make movies for New Line Cinema, and I'm going to have the opportunity to do that. So it's just, it's a really nice accord, I think is the best way of describing it, where we're all looking at each other and going, let's work together and let's see how much we
can
achieve.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and like you say, it's a vote of confidence, and it's a you know, it's a sign of intent and ambition to to do something.
Exactly.
Are you ever going to do a rom-com? Just
The second ever screenplay I speculatively wrote in my early 20s was a rom-com.
Right. We may see it yet.
So never say never. I don't know if it'll work now. Maybe a rom-com with a ghost.
Perfect.
Something that has a bit of an 80s vibe to it. Never say never. But look, a great story is always interesting. I will say I always like there to be something a little bit out of the ordinary or otherworldly within that kind of story. But, you know, there's lots of ways of telling stories like that and having myth and using myth in certain ways to give things that otherworldly feel. But ultimately, I'm driven by trying to make things that people want to see in a cinema, in a dark room, have a collective experience and be moved in some way. That's really the goal of me and the people that I work with.
Cool beans. Listen, man, one final thing. If you ever need a dead body,
yes.
I'm available, okay?
I thought you said you got the keys to a graveyard or something.
I think my prowess as an actor, I feel, would involve me being on a slab. So I'm available.
You're good at being still.
Absolutely. That's the extent of my abilities, I think, as a thespian. So if you ever need a dead body, and there are plenty of people listening that would love to see me dead. So
I tell you what, I make a deal with you now.
Yeah.
So with the TV show based on Irish folklore, if we get that off the ground and we make it, there's a lot of dead bodies in that.
Cool.
And there's a lot of dead bodies on slabs. So we've said it here now. If that show gets announced and gets off the ground, you contact me and I'll cast you as a dead body, not a bother.
Okay, I've only one condition. Just the one, Lee, okay? If we can spit on it now and shake on it now. I've only one condition.
Go for it.
Full frontal nudity is essential. Mine, I mean.
I thought you were going to say you wanted your own trailer, and I couldn't promise that.
No, absolutely not. I'm easily pleased. I'm in.
We will light you delicately.
All right, off, as in with the lights off. Listen, sir, it's been wonderful. I could talk to you for another hour. I know you have to go, and we've gone over your time. I really appreciate the chat. Anytime you're ever around, if you fancy calling in, we'd love to have you. It's ridiculous. I'm talking to you like I'm your uncle. We're so proud of you, myself and the rest of the family. We're delighted for you.
You're too young to be my uncle anyway.
At Curly Cronin, if you want to follow Lee on Instagram and on Twitter, and you'll be watching something from him very, very soon. Lee, listen, man, thanks so much for taking the call. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for the chat. Really enjoyed talking. Take care.
Cheers, man. Bye.
All the best. Bye.
Oh, why can't we talk as enthusiastically or passionately about our business?
Yeah.
Instead, the only thing we can talk about with limited limp passion is traffic lights and the buttons on the pedestrian cross.
The thing I take away from, because we've spoken to Lee twice now, is his absolute bulletproof self-confidence, or at least the confidence to try things, to push the envelope. As he says, making a movie, so many moving parts and all that responsibility, and he just fronts up and faces up to it and gets it done. This is a guy who's in uncharted territory as an Irish person. 135 million is what Evil Dead Rises. That is the highest grossing amount for an Irish-born, Irish-directed
movie. You would be confident then, though, wouldn't you?
Well,
but he was confident before that, though, I suppose.
But now he has to live up to that success, so there's added pressure and all that jazz, but he's doing it.
The book that I've been... There's so much I wanted to talk to him about, and like I say, we ran out of time, but there's a whole other end of it, the business end, that I'd be intrigued by, because he's in the create. Obviously, he's literally a creative. He writes it, then he goes out and records it, then he chops it together and he releases it. That's the creation. But then there's all the other stuff that there's a focus on, like tax, money, paying for the toilet roll, getting it done on time. Who's going to get the truck? Like, that's the element, because there are three of them involved in the production company. I'm fascinated by how that works, and particularly in Ireland, given that they're doing so much here, not just him, but like there are so many productions working in Ireland that this is something that people work in and people make money off up the road from where you're listening, if you're listening in Ireland. This is after all a podcast. Let me give a quick mention as well. That book has blown my mind, and there's so many incredible stories, Hollywood stories, by Ed Zwick. He's directed loads of stuff. Legends of the Fall would have been a big one. 30-something was the TV show. He's behind that. Loads of stuff. He did the Last Samurai with Tom Cruise. Hits, Flops, and Other Illusions, it's called. It's a fascinating listen, and it's all about the movie-making business. And, of course, Lee, if you can check him out, Lee Cronin, we'll be seeing something from him soon. We're done. JP@todayfm.com is the email address. Smash that like and subscribe, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
Uh-oh. Ray Foley.
Oh, here we go. Here come the details.
Weekday afternoons from 2 on Today FM.
Ray.
Yeah.
I love the show.
Hey!